like to turn it over to you.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks. My name is Nishan De Silva. I'm part of the Office 365 engineering team, and I'm here this morning to talk to you about advanced data governance that we announced this week. I'm sure you have, there's been some interesting press coverage we got. We didn't expect to get too much coverage, but we have been getting a lot because of some of the work, not only with data governance that we announced around threat intelligence and also advanced threat protection. What I'm going to do for the next hour or so is to spend some time with you to talk to you about our vision for compliance in Office 365 and how, what do we mean by advanced data governance, and spend some time about the true life cycle that we talk about with data governance, do a quick solution demo, and then talk to you a little bit about what is coming next with advanced data governance. And just want to do a quick slide transition and sound check. Is everything good to go?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. So as we think about the cloud, and obviously Larry has known me for a while. I've been at Microsoft for about 7 years plus, and I've been in this engineering team 6+ months, but before that I was the CTO for the legal department, and as being part of Microsoft's legal department, this is what we hear from our customers all the time about security, compliance, and transparency. So big areas that especially working in the legal vertical and highly regulated organizations have been always concerned about the cloud. And so our team has created, really, to focus on that, we are about now 350 people strong in the information protection team that we focus on these three key areas as we evolve in Office 365. Some of the things that we are working on already is around how do we not only protect and get certifications to the cloud, but how do we continue to put more and more controls and processes. And I'll talk at the end a little bit more about some of the strong partnerships we are building between Office 365 and Azure, from all the way to bringing your own key, et cetera. So you can imagine the commitment for protecting and securing the cloud is pretty significant. And also some of the other projects that I'm working on, I'm happy to talk if you have some time at the end of this call, if there's anyone that is relevant, is this new regulation that's dawning upon us called GDPR. So as we look at our certifications across the globe, we are pretty strong across the world, and we are just beginning, and there are some various other certifications that we've already started working on, continue to show that we are enterprise-ready cloud platform for the world. As we think about the platform and the certifications and building that trust, we also wanted to have a guiding principles when it comes to even things like e-discovery, whether it's data governance, threat intelligence, is really these three guiding principles, which is about, let's make sure, and I joined the call a little earlier, I heard about teams and what's happening with Office 365 groups, and as these workloads improve and innovate, one of the key things as part of the compliance team is we need to make sure that it does not disrupt the way people do productivity. Many traditional organizations really force people to work a certain way, create a structured taxonomy the way you want compliance to enable, and our goal here is to really try to not disrupt productivity of the business user. The second principle is that we've done a pretty bad job for the last 10 years or so letting people take data out, especially in the on-premise world, into other entities and other third-party solutions, and we're really making a commitment to keep the data in place where we can take some intelligent insights to take action on your data. So really this in-place concept really is coming to life about what we want to do going to the future from data governance, e-discovery, and beyond. And then to also, as we do this, we went and really realized we had multiple portals that we were building in the 365 service, and we unified all this by something called the Security and Compliance Center portal. And from that Security and Compliance Center portal, we are able to now let you control your data, access your reports, take actions. And this is where we will continue to innovate and bring more and more coherence as some of these work products come in, the workloads, like Teams and Yammer and beyond, into Office 365's compliance workspace. we want you to be able to take action on it. So as I think about that, the security and compliance center is where our data governance happens. And today, we're able to enable capabilities for data governance in Outer Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, Public Folders, Skype for Business. And what's to come this summer is Teams and Yammer. So those are two on our roadmap very quickly that especially Teams have gained significant momentum since GA, and we are working very closely with the Teams organization to enable retention policies, deletion policies on their data. So as we look at data governance, and that's what I'm going to be spending the rest of our time, we've heard from our customers about, I feel like these days it's garbage in, garbage out. I have all this junk data in on-premise data sources, and I want to bring them to the cloud, but can you help us with kind of bringing that data and cleaning it up so I have a much better way of managing and classifying and retaining in data, right? Second was many organizations have multiple policies, and those are paper-based. They all sit on everyone's either intranet side, this amazing, beautiful retention policy or deletion policy, but how do you actually operationalize that? So those are some of the things that we heard, and of course some of the other ones such as we don't know how to even protect our data, if it's HIPAA data or PII data, what can you do around that? So these are some of the pain points that we heard, and through all this, we really felt like we have to really think about leapfrogging data governance from what we see with our competitors or what products that are out there, and we really started focusing on the intelligence piece of this, which is really, I'll spend some time talking and also showing you, is how do we do auto classification, where you can actually let the business take action, but if they need to take action, we'll still provide those capabilities, but where we are investing is the auto classification piece. And the second is, how can we, because we know what you have in our service, what data, how can we give you intelligent policies so you can take action on them? And also, how do we have certain types of alerts that are relevant to data governance that we also want to empower not only the administrator, but how about we also empower the business? If there is an employee that is probably next week going to leave the company, and if they are going to download tons of data, how can we set up an alert? And that alert, let the manager be aware of that. So I'll spend some time talking about that also as part of the advanced data governance capabilities. One of the key things I love about talking about any kind of solution is to really kind of throw a mental model at you. So it's really, when we talk about data governance, there are two ways that we want to be able to protect and secure our data, or retain it or get rid of it if you don't need it, right? So one way I mentioned to you earlier is about smart import. So we continue to invest this feature around smart import where you can, as you're bringing the data in, how you can classify the data and either get rid of it so that you have an audit report that you actually got rid of that data, because that becomes a really important certification of destruction that you can keep. So that if someone has an audit or a regulatory request to say, I actually followed a process to delete it. So smart import is an area that we continue to invest in. And the second thing is around as data gets created in the various work products that are out there with Office 365, how do we able to apply and auto-classify, apply policies, and also do the alerts and audits. And all this concept really brings it together with in-place data governance. And these things can be executed with our security and compliance center. So, now this, I apologize, this is a bit of an eye chart, but at least it gives you a quick mental model where we are investing, right? So, as we ingest data, there are multiple ways. We also work with partners to bring non-Microsoft data into the service. There's an API that we've exposed to bring that data in. And of course, the fastest way that today we are seeing globally customers actually getting data into Office 365, here's the irony, they actually ship it using FedEx to us, and that's how we're getting the data in. And then I'm going to talk to you today about the in-place data governance, and If you have not heard about some of the investments we're making in eDiscovery, I encourage you to take a look at some of the work we're doing there. And everything, we want to be able to audit the heck out of everything that's inside the platform service. So before I jump into a demo, let me pause there for a minute to see if there's any questions so far.
Anyone on the phone, if you have a question, go ahead, jump in. Anything from the room?
Is there a recorded copy of this whole thing? Can you share this?
Hey,
Nishad, just a quick question. Is there a recorded copy of this whole session that we're having?
We're recording the Skype
awesome.
Meeting.
Okay.
We're recording the Skype meeting. There's been two requests, one from other people on Skype and one from the room for the slide
we'll
deck.
Try and get the slides.
Share the slides afterwards.
I'm happy to share the slide deck after the meeting. I'll send it to Larry, and feel free to share that with everyone.
Okay, great. All right, carry on then.
And great. No, it's exciting because finally I feel like a free person. Now that we have GA, I can openly talk about everything. So excellent. So I'm going to I just want to stop at this slide just to show you one of the key things that I've started working with a couple of customers before we went GA, and we've been working through how to actually deploy the capabilities of data governance in various enterprises, from highly regulated organizations to large to mid-sized to small. And something that we end up always spending time in the security and compliance center is where which role who should have. So I'll spend a little bit of time there as you start talking and thinking about data governance. This whole concept, while we gave you all the aspects of creating policies, the actions you can take, one thing that's really important as an organization need to think about, who gets to actually access and create these policies? Who's going to actually monitor them and administer them? So there are different roles you can create. So that's just, this is just to kind of like whet your appetite about thinking about the various roles in an organization as you deploy this. And then finally, what I'm going to show you today is very quickly how I can come and run a retention action or a deletion action across the entire workloads in Office 365. How do you pinpoint and say, I want to just run a policy on a couple of SharePoint sites, Office 365 groups, and a couple of email boxes, let's say for that M&A team, so that how can you have a combination of workloads into a specific unit. Then come and show you while we want to move to the future with intelligence and machine-assisted learning to machine learning, the reality is that some of our customers still do want to take a crawl, walk, run approach to say, you know what, I would love to still create some labels and push it out to SharePoint, Outlook, and OneDrive, and how can actually the users take an action on it. So I'll show you some of the ways we do that, and then come back and show you some of the intelligence capabilities that we were able to leverage really from our 2 years ago acquisition of Equivio. That's really where some of the data governance capabilities were born, to take that predictive coding intelligence that we brought to the service. Okay, so I'm going to now switch over from my PowerPoint to my slide to the demo, and let me do a quick check to make sure that you are seeing my admin center.
Yes, we are.
Great. So I just wanted to do a quick, like I'm sure most of you know how to create Office 365 tenancies, but just to let you know, if anyone wants to play around with Office 365 data governance, I would encourage you to, you can get a 30-day trial. I've already created 7 over the weekend just to look at all sorts of different scenarios. It's pretty easy. Go ahead and create an E5 30-day tenant, and you can go around, play around with advanced data governance. After you come to the admin center, all you do is go to Security and Compliance Center, and that will bring you into this home dashboard. This is where you can land. And just to get a pulse in the call today, how many of you know all the capabilities of Security and Compliance Center?
So quick show of hands in the room, and I'll count them. I've got half, two halves of one hand. So
you keep adding stuff, so it's hard to know.
Yeah, the comment in the room is they keep adding things, so you always feel like there's
I know,
something
there. I know, that's the curse of being, you know, being a customer or with Microsoft. Just keep adding stuff. So why don't I do this? If it's okay with everyone, may I take maybe 5 minutes and do a quick tour of the Security and Compliance Center? Will that be helpful before we jump into? Great.
Yes. So violent agreement.
Okay. Great. So these are widgets that we ship the product with. So you, as you come in, you can actually customize these widgets. So one thing I would encourage you to do is just after you get that E5 trial tenancy, go and add widgets, reset widgets. So these are just intelligent widgets, and they're just beginning. So there's an entire team that's under my boss right now who owns the Security and Compliance Center, and we work with various teams creating these intelligent widgets about how much data that you have. So there's a whole lot of capabilities that we're going to add as these intelligent widgets using the Microsoft Graph. And that's kind of where we got the APIs. And today, it's really the data that we have only in Office 365. But customers are asking us, hey, maybe if I have legacy data sitting in Azure, can I bring that widget in here? Oh, by the way, when are you guys going to also expose the APIs where I can connect to Box and connect to, while I showed you that slide of the lifecycle, that's only right now, it's not bi-directional, so it's about bringing the data in through import. But how about if I want to go bi-directional, and how can you start showing those widgets? So those are some of the innovations and scenarios that we are capturing, but you can think about this as this intelligent dashboard. And second area I want to talk about is to show you the permissions. So this is where as you come in here, you actually have various roles in the organization that you have specific roles for each one. So the compliance administrator, e-discovery manager, security admin. So some of these can be a tenant admin. Some can be actually the business side. For example, internally at Microsoft, our legal department, there are only folks in e-discovery who have this role. And IT does not have a role to crawl everything and look at data. So we made an intentional way of building this security profile, because while you have permissions to act on workloads or sites or mailboxes, the content office, only if you have the e-discovery role, you'll be able to see that. So just keep that in mind. There are various roles that give you various levels of permissions. And every organization can either take these roles and customize it or add new roles by looking at the permissions they have. So that's just an area that many of our customers who are a part of our preview program were able to test around with. I mentioned about alerts, and here's where you can actually create an alert. And this is where I just created one called Chicago Coon Project this morning. So I'll come back at the end and show you what that looks like. DLP, this is our DLP capabilities of making sure that if you don't want to share anything outside, where you can add policies and procedures there. I'll be spending time with data governance. And here's threat intelligence, and we made some announcements there that this around, I think in the next month or so, you'll actually see a really cool dashboard that will come here called Threat Explorer that really gives you a dashboard of all the activities that are going on around anti-malware, safe attachments, safe links, and all the viruses that are trying to and hack into your environment. And here's Search and Investigate, where eDiscovery lives. It's also a place where you can do a content search across the entire service, and also where you can come and audit the heck out of everything, right? We also are going to be shipping various reports. These are some canned reports that you'll get in a dashboard, so you can very quickly take action on various activities around whether it's ATP, DLP, et cetera. So that's just to take a quick tour of what the Security and Compliance Center is. So the first thing I'm going to do is go into data governance, and I'm going to go into retention and go ahead and create that first policy I mentioned to you about. And so that first policy I was going to do was really create a retention policy for the entire service. So let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to hit create. And I hit next. And this is where I can then determine how long I want to retain it. So let's say I want to retain files in my service for 15 years, and I'm going to have create or last modified. In Q2, we'll be shipping event-based retention. So that means you can have custom events that connect to your transaction systems. The first phase will be where you can create your events in here. Ultimately, through API, we'll expose an API where you can connect to PeopleSoft or your HR system or SAP for your financial, et cetera, or for your matter management system for case management. So that's where we are working on for Q2 is for event-based retention. But for today, what we shipped has create date last modified. And I hit next. And very quickly, here's where I can run that service across the entire platform. Just to show you what it looks like, here's what it will run across all Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, Office 365, Skype for Business. Okay, so that's kind of to show you that first scenario. Very quickly, I can come here and run a policy across the entire service. And I hit next. And this is one of the things that we do for our financial customers, for SEC regulation. We have something called a preservation lock on or off. The reason you always want to have it as off, because if you do on it, just for the kick of it, I'll show you what it looks like. It really tells you, are you sure you want to do this? Because it does, what it does is it locks even an administrator changing it. This was specifically built for broker-dealers, but I'm sure there may be other scenarios if you're under an investigation or some kind of a regulatory request that says, we do not want anyone tampering with our data. That's where you can come and run this preservation capability. I'm going to hit no, and I hit next. So this is where very quickly I'm able to come and now run that general policy across the entire service, and that's when I hit create. So that was my scenario number one. Within seconds, I can come very quickly and create a policy that will run across the entire service, or I can come and say, you know what, I just want to run it on a specific workload or combination. So I can pick a couple of emails, and for this demo purposes, let me just go here to Office 365 groups, and I can pick a couple of them here. Hit done. Hit next. And same screen there. And then I hit create policy. So that's very quickly how you can create a policy retention action or a deletion action across the entire service. Or you can come and pinpoint and run a workload, specific workload or a combination of workload. Very quickly you can create the policy. I know that after GA, a lot of people ask the question about how long does it take, because we have to crawl various workloads and stuff. So the SLA for that is it'll take about a day. SharePoint does it in about, and 365 groups, we can get it done in about a couple of hours, but Exchange takes a little bit longer to crawl, especially if you're a multinational company. So that's just to kind of show you very quickly the two scenarios I talked about, how you can come and create a retention action across all the entire workloads in C365 and soon to come Teams and Yammer, and how we can very quickly pinpoint to a workload. So the third thing I'm going to show you is this is where most records managers may come and automate their retention schedule. Is we have this new concept moving away from content types in SharePoint, because we have created this labels engine that runs across the entire service. So here I can come here very quickly and create labels. So I have created a couple of labels here. And for our demo purposes, let's go ahead and create one. And after I create that label, I have an option of whether you want this label to have retention or not. So let's go ahead and turn on retention. And again, you have a retention action or a deletion action. So let's say I want to keep this for, let's say, 12 years. And again, I have three triggers for now and then event triggers to come. Here's where I create date, last modified, or when someone actually clicked on labeling it. And here we can also make this an immutable record. So this means if you classify this, if you are a business user, after you classify it, very similar to what capabilities we had with the old SharePoint Record Center, it'll be immutable and no one can delete it. So I can click that and I can go ahead and create that label. So after you create the label, one of the things we can do is there are two things we can do. I'm going to show you later on the auto classification capability, but as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm going to show you how we can actually let the business users manually classify. So what we can do here is after this label gets created, when I just create it, I can say, you know, usually when you want people to classify things in SharePoint, OneDrive, or Outlook, you don't want people to go and select 25 things, right? So it's about two or three usually. So let's say we pick that label there, and let's pick contract administration, and let's click client data, data work, and I hit publish labels. And here now you can see there are three labels that we're going to publish. And then I hit next. And again, very similar to you can publish this across the entire workload, or you can come and say, I just want to publish this to the specific things that are here. For this demo, I'll just say, click all, and I give it a name. And I hit next, and that gives me a quick summary of when you create this. Now, I'll also tell you some of the questions I get when I do this demo is, I created a label, I published these. One of these contract administration, sorry, client data work is 7 years, but we have a new request or our business model changed. Can we now update that retention from 7 years to 10? The answer is yes. So we let you edit a label, and this will again take the new retention action and propagate it across the service. So that is definitely, we consider that as we build this capability. So here I am. I'm about to now go ahead and hit publish. As you know, this demo is only an hour, and if I hit publish, this is going to take until tomorrow to show up. So imagine this being a cooking show or something where I now pull out the what went into the oven. So if I go to my mail, and let me go ahead and go to one of my emails here, and if I were to look at my assigned policy, those labels, and this is from a previous demo, you see that they are available for you to tag emails in Outlook. If you go to SharePoint, and those labels are also available for you to tag them. In fact, I just uploaded this morning so I can show you what it looks like. I go to my information panel, and here's where you can choose the label. I can hit 10 here. That label will get saved. And again, these are just the standard records management columns that I just created in SharePoint. So very quickly, you can see those labels showing up there. And same experience also in OneDrive, right? You just click on the email, go to information panel. So that's how very quickly you can create those labels here from my labels engine, and publish those labels engine for a workload, and then they show up to your business users. So I'm going to pause there for a minute, because all the things that I showed you is all so far capabilities that you get with E3. I'm about to jump into E5 capabilities in a minute, but everything that I showed you, E1 through E3. Any questions?
Okay. Yeah, so one question that I've gotten in the past there when you were showing the labeling of the documents in SharePoint and in OneDrive, the question is, how is the label applied to the file? Is it a SharePoint property that stays with the document library, or is it something that's stamped into the file so that if the file moves around, that label sticks with the file?
The label sticks with the file.
Okay, so no matter where that file gets moved, it'll keep that 10 or 7-year retention you applied there.
Right. If it's immutable, then you won't be able to move it.
Right. Did you have a question?
So it was embedded in the advanced properties on the document itself?
Yes.
Okay, and then on the labels, and you were comparing it to content types, are you saying that labels will be the evolution of content types? And it sounded like you were hinting you're getting rid of content types?
You know, I don't think, so since we kind of sit on top of in the security and compliance center, this engine that we've created sits on top of all the different workloads. I think the SharePoint product team may continue content types as needed for any work that they do. But when we start looking at, you know, are we going to continue to support records management with SharePoint Record Center and what we are building here, the answer is we will start while we support it today together. Over time, you can see that we'll transition all those capabilities over here and also give customers who already have created record centers using content types to have a nice migration path to come over to the Security and Compliance Center. So that's kind of the evolution. And the second step we are also working on that I get a lot of conversations around labels is that Azure has their own labels engine that lets you also label things and classify for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. We've already started a project that's working together with the Azure team that these two labels engines will merge into one.
Okay, so then really you're kind of doing your own content type, but you're calling it labels. Content types themselves will stay however they evolve, but going forward, labels will be essentially what you're using as content types to manage the policy on the documents or files or objects or whatever.
That's because remember, we are going across Yammer, Teams,
yep.
Exchange, SharePoint, everything. Yep, absolutely. So that was kind of, I mean, just to let you kind of give you the inside baseball on this is interesting. I love the word tag, but I think labels word one. So that's kind of like the name that we'll move forward, just also to bring that consistency up as we start merging the Azure label engine and the Office 365 engine. But, yeah, definitely transitioning away from content types into these labels because we want to go across everything that's available in Office 365.
So this is Ralph. I think we have to be careful because the concept of content type is not so much what it is as in what is the structure. So that's what really a content type really is in SharePoint. We're not talking structure here. We're talking identification, categorization, classification. We've used content types for classifying, but that may not be the right thing to do, or it really depends on what your model is. So we have to be careful. We want to make sure that there's distinguished content types is a different thing than essentially a categorization, a label, or a way to maybe prompt a decision.
That's a really good way to look at it because especially with Record Center, right, everyone, including myself, when we created the Record Centers, we use content types, right? So and here, I think I'm definitely coming for you from a retention classification point of view, and content types can be used for many, many things.
And is there any connection to the Term Store, or is that, again, the SharePoint concept?
Lots of customers have asked us about how including our own internal Microsoft IT, we've used the Term Store to build this pretty immense classification engine. That is something that's on our roadmap to, if someone wants to take advantage of that Term Store into this classification engine. So we are definitely looking at how that can work. We don't have that slotted yet, but that's definitely a work item that's on our roadmap.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. So let me continue on, and then I'll obviously we'll open up again at the end for questions. So now I've created these capabilities, and let's say that I want to actually go into more the automation capabilities of this. So I'm going to show you how very quickly I can create one of these labels that I created here called, let's create a label. I want to look at PII data in my service, and I can create a quick label, and I can give it a retention period of, let's say, 7 years. And then I go ahead and hit next. And I create that label, and I can then take this. This is where, like, what I've shown you so far is where two things, like the IT administrator or your data governance person can come and run retention actions or deletion actions across the entire service or pinpoint to a workload. Then I showed you some of the manual capabilities that we have. But here I can actually take this and say I want to auto-apply this label, and I can actually either run a query or look at the sensitive types that we are shipping, that we shipped. This is where, very similar to DLP, I can actually go and take a look at my PII data and say all U.S. financial data, credit card number, bank account in my service. If I want, I can even edit this because we let this just default settings that we ship with, but you can edit that if you like. And here we give it a name. And I can then choose the location where I want those to run. Either you run it on a SharePoint site, Exchange, etc. And I can auto-apply this. Now, because of this intelligence, it does take for us, because you're then obviously crawling the entire service, and it takes a little bit of time for it to actually propagate and find those. But that's just a really fast way that you can very quickly find PII data. And then I'll show you in a minute how this actually shows up in our dashboard if you do find it and detect it, right? So that's how very quickly I can go find that information. The other thing that you can do is you can also run something called a query. So here, let me just go back and show you that's easier than creating a new one in time. I can actually, this is where very similar to the eDiscovery search, I can come and say that was PII. I was able to have canned templates that we ship where you can pick HIPAA or financial, privacy, etc. Or you can run your own query. Let's say I want to go and find anything that's an NDA, and I can type in NDA contract, and this is very similar to eDiscovery, like how we do a search. Give it a name. And I hit next, and again, any location you want, and you can run that. So these are some of the E5 intelligence capabilities where you can very quickly auto-classify and run through the service that we have, or you can run a query search and go ahead and apply retention policies. So these are just two ways we do that, and that's kind of where we will continue to invest more and more of our time. And when you actually see some of those insights, if I go to my data governance dashboard, this is where you actually get to see, like I actually uploaded a couple of tax documents into the service in my demo environment. So very quickly, it detected it. It took about 2-3 days to detect it, and it detected that I had a 1040 in there, and then I can very quickly come and create this retention policy. So these are some of the ways very quickly we are able to not only go detect it and identify and then also apply retention policy. What's coming next for us in this summer is many customers not only want to detect and identify and retain those PII or HIPAA data, but also want to run a DLP policy. So today you can still do that. You have to run it in a separate place. But we will kind of create that seamless workflow when you create a retention policy, go apply which sensitive type that you want to pick, and then we ask you, do you also want to make sure you don't want this, if you find this data, do you want it not shared outside the organization, or even internally you don't want it shared, right? So those are some of the things that we're working on. So this is just to very quickly show you some of those intelligent ways where you can run a query or a sensitive type or even customize that sensitive type. And then finally, I want to show you how quickly we can do an alert. And this is where I can come into alerts and create an alert. Let's create a new one. Let's call this, and we can give it what kind of alert you want to actually choose. So here's where you can actually, there's a whole lot of capabilities that you can say, I want to know if someone deleted something, added a user, did extensive download. So there's a, you should really spend some time to figure out all these different capabilities that we offer for you. And this is where you can set up an alert. And let's go ahead and pick one. So let's say this person, if they delete a group, and you can have, you can multi-select that. And then the other one is just really figuring out who the person is. So let's say it is Belinda that we want to run this alert on. And this is the part that I really like, because lots of tenant administrators applauded us saying, oh my goodness, I don't want to be getting all these alerts. So you can actually pick whoever in that group is. You can pick a person to get the alert, and you save, and then it starts triggering that immediately the machine starts looking at and start notifying it. So that's how very quickly you can create alerts also for data governance.
While you're there on the alert screen,
yes.
A couple of questions that I've gotten about the alerts functionality. So you showed how you could scope the alert to only watch a certain person if they deleted a group, but you could leave the person out of the scope, right?
Yes. Yes.
So then it would be anybody who deleted a group would trigger an alert.
Yeah, so there are some customers, Larry, who are thinking about using this. Sometimes it's not all about someone doing bad things. There was a scenario that one CFO accidentally sent the financials to a CEO, but it was a fake CEO account. So maybe for the CFO, you can say, I want to, just set up some threshold where if he starts doing external sharing, on this specific SharePoint site, you want to get an alert, right?
Yep. Okay. And then the second question was, as far as who the alert is sent to, the example that you showed was multi-selecting a set of administrators. Can you specify a distribution group or a security group to send the alert to so that the audience is managed outside of this tool?
Yes. Most of the customers who are using this right now are creating security groups for that. Yep.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. That was a lot I covered. So let me open up for questions at this point. In fact, before you do that, let me do a quick recap so that we are all on the same page. I did policy across all workloads, specific locations, manual publishing, all this is E3, and then auto classification, apply retention, and intelligence pieces, all E5. Let me just see if there's anything else I need to cover. And then two things we are working for the summertime is event-based retention and manual disposition with workflows. And then a couple of other things like important things like bringing Teams and Yammer into the fruition. So that's kind of where we are, and also continuing to invest a heck of a lot in the import process. So with that, let me open up for questions.
So from this side over here, so here's a question. What you were showing through the last hour or so many possible options for selecting ways of tracking, auditing, monitoring, you name it. Just getting that started, or even just knowing what to select and perhaps what's not appropriate to select, is itself, it's either a skill set to itself, or it's a lot of work where a person might miss something that they're supposed to hit, or they might put something in that turns out to be inappropriate based on the scenario. The question is, is there like any kind of like profiles that you might have either in blogs or in suggestions or maybe in training that says, okay, you're a financial company, these are your default settings that you're likely to have, should have, you're a medical company, here's what you should be looking at based on the fact that you're a hospital or you're an insurance company, for example. Or is it pretty much everything is unlocked? We just gave you 1,000 locks, but it's all unlocked, and now here are keys, have fun. Is it that particular case? Or is there...
Thank you so much for asking that question. Really good question. So we've got that feedback about one side is like, wow, you have given us so many capabilities. It's a little overwhelming. You really simplified a couple of things that are like you're giving so much power to us and empowering. How do we kind of go with this? So a couple of things we are working on. So, in fact, this week I'm working with our internal records management team and data governance team to really create it's more like a white paper that we are going to publish in about 2 weeks, exactly to what you're talking about. How do you, if you are this type of company, we're going to take you through a scenario how to operationalize the retention scale. How do you actually create an alert? What type of alert? So those kinds of things it'll be about a 15, 20-page document. Then also for alerts and auditing, we are creating a separate FAQ that will get published very quickly. So those kinds of, I mean, you wanted to ship the product out, but those processes, FAQs are getting created as we speak. So no, that is that you should see on our websites in TechNet probably by the end of April.
So I have a question here regarding your DLP module. So we've been doing some testing around, you know, different data types and low counts versus high counts, and we've been seeing quite a variance in just the detection capability. Meaning, you know, obviously there's certain data types and you go through the compliance and you look for DLP, so you might be, say, looking for driver's license numbers or credit card information or depending on what your policy is, but we had a few conversations with Microsoft Access Support and, you know, they kind of come back to us saying, yeah, we recognize there's some problems with some of these pieces that you need to contact our support to kind of tune these a little bit deeper, because basically what we're seeing in some of these modules is with, like, the false positive rates and the true positive rates from a low count versus a high count, meaning when you take a look at it from a DLP perspective, you see there might be a file with maybe one or two instances of something in it as a suspect, maybe thousands. There's been a variance, and I think part of our frustration is working with Microsoft and saying, okay, we recognize there's some problems with these pieces, but where is this going from a maturity perspective, from a reporting and a capabilities of detection? It's really a struggle for us because as we're evaluating these pieces. So I guess my question to you is, you know, how do we work better with Microsoft regarding tuning out the false positive rates, you know, and detecting DLP? Because obviously as we're putting these modules in place looking through the security and compliance suite, you know, we have to be able to detect pretty accurately where the data is at so we can apply these compliance rules across our tenants. And that's a challenge for us at this point because, you know, we're going through looking at it and we're finding some, in a lot of cases, there's a fairly high level of accuracy in some cases, in other cases there's not. So it's a struggle for us because we have to keep digging through different pieces.
Thanks for that question. So a couple of things on that. So I know that one of the things about what we're doing with whether it's the query-based retention in data governance or in DLP, we're looking at those signals and doing pattern recognition. One of the key things that we are working on to reduce that false positive is that one of the other pieces that will probably be around Q3 that we'll really, you start hearing more us talking about, which is not talking, actually showing you, because already we started talking about it, which is around creating machine learning capabilities where we are going to let you train the system. You get to empower to look at those false positives and make some adjustments. So that kind of a window into your data to let the machine learn, that is coming. That will really help you with the DLP scenarios and also the data governance scenarios. Having said that, the DLP team literally sits right next to me. If you can share your information with Larry, I'll put you in touch with one of the PMs, and so we can actually, you know, so this is the great thing that I was able to come and talk to, and I've been partnering with Larry on many, many things, but one thing in engineering is we really do want to hear directly from pain, when we hear from partners and customers and others, the pain points, we want to hear from you, and we want to be able to resolve it. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to get you in touch with one of my PMs to really go through the specific scenario, and let's figure out what's going on there. But for the broader audience, what we are doing around some of these capabilities from looking at these signals from machine-assisted learning today about pattern recognition, where we are going next is the piece around machine learning, and then ultimately, you know, the whole self-driving car model, autonomous vehicles, right? It's the AI piece. But, yeah, far away, but that's kind of where we want to achieve, to really go and democratize this DLP and data governance capabilities, when the system should already know if they start working on something that's sensitive that the policies automatically are happening, right? That's where we want to go. But I know that's a long-winded answer for you, but if you wouldn't mind giving your information to Larry, I'll connect you with one of my PMs so we can actually pinpoint exactly what's going on with the scenario.
Yep, we'll do that. Follow up here?
One follow-up question at a time. So with that, I guess, false positives, is this tagging capability that you just demonstrated, is that relying on the same engine, meaning, you know, we run that same potential right now until this additional learning capability evolves?
That's correct.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
Another question over here.
And then the way it's doing the scoring or the auto classification today, is that just Boolean based? Is it just black white, or are you actually allowed to create a scoring model and say, you know, this value is worth 20 and this other value is worth 30, and if I see them both, then I apply the tag?
So we have like we kind of like using some of the intelligence from the Equivio engine there. And then we actually run a separate sync engine to start really going and doing the classification. So one of the things, feedback we got was, well, if I tag a bunch of things, created a bunch of labels, I like to know the insights of that. So that kind of an insight dashboard we are going to provide for you in Q2. So those are not the big ticket items, but results of actions we've taken, those kinds of things we're going to start showing to you in Q2 timeframe. This will kind of expand a little bit more to give you some more intelligent insights. But so right now, the engine that we're using, there's a couple of things that we're doing around what we kind of created using the predictive analytics engine from Equivio to do this kind of classification.
So then it is black and white, or are you saying it's a combo, or, I mean...
It is a combo, and the reason pausing is that I just need to check and see how much we expose of what happens behind the scenes, and that's why if you give me your name, I'll try to make sure that I don't give any information out that I'm not supposed to. So that's why I'm not I just don't want to comment publicly on that one, but I'm happy to have a conversation under NDA with you separately on that to show you exactly what happens.
Yeah, and then on the terminology, do you guys set it up so that you can actually auto-suggest additional terminology that you should be looking for? So is there any kind of statistical thing that's in the background that's saying, okay, here's these other terms that you should actually be looking for besides what you know is PII or HIPAA or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, those are the scenarios that we are building right now. They're not available as part of Q1 GA, but that's absolutely on the roadmap, exactly the various types of suggestions. Yep. Mm-hmm. And not only suggestions from your service. So let's say you're a pharmaceutical company, and we also have another 200-plus pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. using the service. You'll say, by the way, you're in the pharmaceutical industry. We see that some of your colleagues have deployed these policies. Would you like to also deploy those policies? So those kinds of recommendations and suggestions are coming.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any other questions from the room?
I've got a question. This is Michael Blumenthal. So going back to training and getting up to speed on using this thing, are there going to be any fast track offerings to help customers walk through this or get this set up for the first time?
I think there is a couple of things that are going on. One is we are just starting to build out the partner ecosystem. We are also working with a couple of training companies to create some videos on this. The other one is that we are going to start creating some YouTube videos about training. And in the announcement itself, I think this is my boss, by the way, Kamal, and there is a link here called Watch This Presentation that gives you step-by-step how to create those policies. But definitely, as things get a little bit more advanced, like event-based disposition, event-based retention, we are definitely going to be creating various things. The other thing that we are doing is we have a partner program, something called an Airlift, for our e-discovery partners, and the data governance will fit into that same partner program, and that's where we are doing various fast-track activities, Airlifts, and things like that. So you will hear more about the different engines that we are firing up for data governance within the next couple of weeks. Very similar to what I mentioned, more on documentation, more on also videos, and also to give step-by-step. And also, we are working probably around May timeframe. We'll have about a bunch of customers who are already piloting this in production to actually have customers show how it really relates to their world and how they're actually using the solution to have more video step-by-step processes that they'll talk about.
Great.
Very good.
Thank you very much. One more question about the kinds of content that are covered in the different content repositories. Do Planner and the video portal fall under SharePoint content, or are those separate?
How did I thought I was going to be done avoiding that question. So the video portal is actually run out of Azure, so that just came through our desk last week. So we are definitely, as we start integrating that Azure Labels engine and Office 365 engine. That's one of the things that we are into consideration. Very similar to today with the group, we are, you know, obviously applying policies to that SharePoint site and to the mailbox. As we do work, there's another work item across the engineering teams called the substrate that we're building, where that these things like Planner and other capabilities can be available for us. So that work is happening. But right now, I would say that's more of a Q3, Q4 to have something like Planner have data governance capabilities.
Great. Thank you.
I know we're getting close on time. Nishan, this is Larry. I had one hopefully quick question going back to the Security and Compliance Center for a second on reports.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know sometimes auditors will come in and, you know, in the old days they used to say, show me your file plan. And now they're going to come in and they're going to say, show me your record or your labeling and data loss prevention plan. Is there a simple report that you can run to give your auditor that summarizes all your configuration?
So you can always run various queries and get the data that's in Office 365. We are right now have about 10 reports just for data governance that we are working on right now. Those will ship also probably in Q2. So those are, we started the reports and we are validating that with about 20 customers to specifically to that, Larry, which is about if there's an investigation, if there's an audit. So those reports will start showing up here. But again, you can always run commandlets and get to your data. Also, some of the other customers have asked, hey, I want to be able to take some data out from the service. So that's where you are going to see more and more how e-discovery and data governance are kind of coming together here. So you can still, with e-discovery, after you do an in-place retention, in-place litigation hold, and you collect that data and you can, you know, put it to an Azure repository. So very similar, you can even, if you want to, for the auditor to take that data out, you can still use that e-discovery engine to do that. But reports-wise, we have a bunch of reports that ship in Q2, and we'll continue to also open this up. Lots of other customers are asking, how can I start pointing Power BI to this thing?
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Last call.
Great.
So we'll let Nishan go. Thank you very much, Nishan. Appreciate it. I think there was a highly attentive audience you had here, and from the high quality of the questions and dialogue, I think it was a well-received session, so thank you very much.
No, I had a lot of fun, too, and really, really tough and good questions, and thanks for that. And like I said, I'll leave you with one comment. So if any of you, one of the things that I also run is something called a white glove program for customers who want to get on the service to have high-touch engagement with engineering. But the criteria to be in the white glove program is that they would be willing to at least be running some policies in production before June 30th. So if there is any customers who are interested in that kind of a program, please reach out to Larry, and I'm happy to talk to them to see if we can get them qualified to be part of that program.
Okay. Great. Terrific.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.